Namaskar. Hello and welcome to P Guru's channel. I'm your host, Sri Iyer. Joining me today is Sri Kumar Kannan as we take a look at the recent phase two elections conclusion. What is the body language of the Prime Minister? What does it indicate? Is there a vision that we can glean beneath all the noise of election rhetoric? Let's welcome Sri Kumar Kannan. Sri Kumarji, Namaskar and welcome to P Guru's channel. How are you?
Namaskar, sir. I'm fine. How about you?
I'm doing well, sir, and a request to all of you to please like this video. We're going to not go talk about who said what. What we are going to talk about is beyond all these things. Is there something that we can get from looking at the body language of the Prime Minister, from looking at the messaging he's trying to do? Because some speeches are long, people tune out, but best usually is towards the end. So all that stuff, Sri Kumar has spent a lot of time analyzing all these things. He's going to share with us, first starting with, how did the phase two electioneering go? Was it satisfactory according to NDA for you, sir?
Yes, sir. A very good evening to all. And as Mr. Sri Iyer said, phase two went on well. I too inked my finger. And it was a very encouraging phase, I should say, because people turned up in large numbers. They braved the sun. And the voter turnout was comparatively very satisfactory, especially in states like Karnataka and other states, including Maharashtra, UP, Bihar, because those are the states where the people population is very high. So, and even Lok Sabha constituencies are high, and they turned up in large numbers. And even in Assam, there are encouraging results. And I should say, as far as the NDA is concerned, the NDA is sitting pretty, I should say, because comparative with the first phase, the second phase was more encouraging for them. And it was a very crucial phase because the second phase gives a runner-up to the next phase, and it gives a turn-off events. If the phase two was also not bridged well, then it could be difficult for NDA. Fortunately, I should say, phase two has made the momentum in favor of NDA. Comparing with the earlier phases and with the 2019 and the difficult seats and the alliance chemistry, I should say that phase two was very encouraging for NDA.
Now, beyond all that stuff, you know, some of the speeches of Prime Minister Modi were revealing. He talked about various things. Of course, he took the, you know, you see two phases of Modi. Before electioning, he puts on his election hat and he is merciless on the mistakes of the opposition. And he has gone, you know, relentlessly behind Rahul Gandhi and Congress. Also, he has been relentless against the Aam Aadmi Party, except in Aam Aadmi Party, without mentioning name, the action has been that way. So we can see that Prime Minister Modi is sensing that there is a cabal that is operating behind, who wanted perhaps Rahul Gandhi as the face for 2024, and perhaps who were lining up somebody else for 2029. And in my opinion, that was Arvind Kejriwal. And that's why I have the rise and fall of AAP behind me. I wrote this book and released in 2018 thinking that, you know, they were done and dusted as far as only, they were going to be only limited to Delhi, but they surprised everyone by winning Punjab. However, that could be a short-lived surprise. We don't know, because if you look at some of the things, I want you to touch upon what is happening in these two camps also. Lots of resignations in Congress party, like state presidents are resigning. And many of the Rajya Sabha members of Aam Aadmi Party, not a word. Where is Bhagwant Singh Mann? He's not coming to the support of his leader. Only Sunita Kejriwal is now heading the campaign. And she is a novice. She hasn't done any campaigning before. Maybe she accompanied Kejriwal a few times. So take a look at all these things. And all that is one side. Also tell us, where do you think Modi's sights are set once he comes back in 2024? Because there was an RBI speech. I would like you to touch upon that too.
Oh, I will first, this discussion will be having two phases. One, let us focus on Prime Minister Modi's part and also the other part, including Arvind Kejriwal. So Prime Minister Modi, even today, he gave an interview to a private news channel. A journalist, he gave an interview where he mentioned that he hinted that even before when the manifesto was released by the Congress party, he mentioned that it is a lookalike of the Muslim League manifesto. So he is mentioning, he is saying in this interview that he thought some of the journalists could go into the details of the manifesto, and they could have taken the hint from the Prime Minister, and they could have done some research and brought about the details of the manifesto. Because if we still remember, whenever the BJP's manifesto used to come before 2024, the Ram Mandir used to be a part of that manifesto. And every journalist or a newspaper or a news agency used to have a debate on that one line of that manifesto, that Ram Mandir is there, so still BJP is hanging on that issue. So when it will going to come, how they are going to achieve. Even in the manifesto, if it is very clear that the Ram Mandir will be built either based on the consensus between the two communities or by a court order, but still the news agency used to run the program for more than 1 week based on the particular issue of the manifesto. But even when the Prime Minister gave a hint about the Congress manifesto, all the news agencies and journalists prefer to stay silent. So this prompted him to go into the details and, you know, rip the Congress apart and, you know, expose the Congress hidden agenda. That's what I mean to say. Because in the, be it the redistribution of the wealth or be it the inheritance tax, the Prime Minister has exposed the Congress dark, I should say, the hidden agendas. Because it is the duty of any opposition party to other parties to expose or to bring about the truth about the manifesto, and there should be a serious discussion on the manifestos. Because whenever the Congress used to say that they have they want to give old pension scheme for the Himachal Pradesh voters, and they used to bring about the five guarantees for the Karnataka voters, when it is being taken seriously by the voters, it becomes a duty of the Prime Minister also to expose what is in stores in the Congress other side of the manifesto. So in this case, he has done the right thing. And about the body language, so especially after the second phase of elections, I am able to sense the nuances of his body language, because Prime Minister Modi is such a personality. So we can make it out beyond his, stony face. What is his, body language tells about whether he is super confident, whether he is upset, or whether he is in tension. Something like that we could make it out. In the second phase of election is concerned, in the third phase campaigning is now going on, and the Prime Minister is doing extensive campaigning in Karnataka, especially in Uttar Karnataka, Davangere, Bellary, and other places, where I can make it out that he is in a very relaxed mood. So I think he feels that whatever he wanted to communicate during the second phase of election, it has reached the ground and it has set the ball rolling for the third phase. So that could be the reason of his relaxed postures. And regarding the Arvind Kejriwal's issue is concerned, we should all feel that the Arvind Kejriwal's period, he came up at a time when there was absolutely very disappointing political environment, particularly during 2012, 2013, 2014. During that time, people saw a hope in him, and he came out with the banner of India against corruption. So we should all feel that Congress, be it Congress, be it BJP, or be it any other party, they have not came out, they have the different ideologies and agendas based on which they were formed. But this Aam Aadmi Party was started with the participation of NGOs in particular, under the banner of India against corruption. And the irony is, such a person is now in jail and he is denied bail or any other relief from the courts, be it in the High Court or be it in the Supreme Court, for the charges being made on him. So there is, I feel, from the beginning itself, there is an understanding between the Congress as well as the Aam Aadmi Party. Because during 2013, when he won for the first time, Arvind Kejriwal faced the election and he was short of a majority. It was a Congress which had about some 8 MLAs or so. They came forward to give an support, and because of which Arvind Kejriwal became the chief minister. And the person who was tom-tomming that he will be putting Sheila Dixit in jail, he has that much number of charges against her. And he preferred to stay, remain silent for the support of the 8 MLAs who had supported him, even during his first tenure of chief ministership. So we should all, we can make it out the, you know, the honesty of this man. And now within a period of less than 10 to 12 years of the formation of this party, and it is now going into the abyss.
So true, so true. Now, one would have thought that, okay, so he came back with 67 out of 70 seats the second time around. Then he could have acted against Congress. He did not do that. So this is what gives rise to the suspicion that this is definitely team B team for Congress, and also B team for perhaps some of the woke people who want India to be run in a certain way. I'll give an example, Shimla Accord. The last day, talks had concluded at 5 p.m. No agreements were signed. Nothing was agreed to. Nothing. Zip. Bhutto was going to go back empty-handed. At 9 p.m. at night, all the, see, those days, 1972, Shimla, all the journalists were, you know, daru aru, and then they were getting ready to bistar banna, you know, getting ready. Next day morning, they were all returning back to the town, to the cities. And at 9 o'clock or 9:30, they're all summoned. Come to, there is an important announcement. And the entire thing got announced. So you make the decision, viewers, what happened between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m.? Who twisted Indira Gandhi's hands to try and come up with the kind of, you know, the worst kind of agreement where India got nothing? And India didn't even get the 50-odd prisoners that Pakistan had taken, and India gave away 93,000. India had put no boundaries on what Bangladesh could do and couldn't do. And India also pulled out the raw from Bangladesh. So ISI could regroup and go back and start raw. And that's how all these Northeast problems started after that. You see, what I'm trying to say is something happened between that 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. on that night. You know, why I'm saying all this is the kind of stuff that people do when you put puppets in power. And Rahul Gandhi would have been an excellent prime minister for others, because he's not capable of self-thought. Then what happens, right? So at least that contrast, I think, is being said by Modi without saying it in so many words. Same thing that Muslims who are thinking that they used to be special, they're all going to be under the same yardstick. That's what I see. When he, without taking the name, he has said all these things. So tell me what you think lies ahead for 2024 and beyond for India.
I can see as a large number of Modi supporters were very skeptical about the turnout and other things. So let me tell you one thing. So they all compare whether the result could be somewhere like that of 2004. Both are, you know, different in so many ways. So first, let me give a contrast between what was 2004 and what was 2024. Then only you can make a comparison between both. And you can also make it out both are not the same. So first, 2004, there were a strong third front leaders. So the third front leaders are those who can give the much needed oxygen for the Congress. So the Congress cannot come to power on its own. It was the time of late Rajiv Gandhi. After that, it didn't came to power on its own. Even Mr. P.V. Narasimha Rao had to rely on certain allies, including AIADMK, Jharkhand Mukti Morcha, for his survival. So the nearest possibility of Congress coming back to power on its own is near to impossible. So the 2004, what we can say is, it was a time where we had very powerful third front leaders, including Lalu Prasad Yadav of RJD, Mulayam Singh Yadav of Samajwadi Party. He had a strong left, which had about 60 MPs. Imagine 60 MPs of left front, with Harkishan Singh Surjit was there, NCP was powerful at that time, Karunanidhi was there from DMK, Andhra Agitations was there, and the much needed support from Congress came from the states of Maharashtra and Andhra Pradesh. So this was the situation in 2004. And the BJP, it had a tired watch pipe. It was sabotaged. All its prospects were sabotaged by Pramod Mahajan. There were no ground level leaders. And the candidates were picked up in like an auction. The seasoned leaders were sidelined. So such a type of a mess were happened during 2004. So despite everybody thought that Vajpayee's name alone can bring them success, it didn't happen so. Come to 2024. Modi, sensing all these issues about the third front, he literally derailed the third front because he is a politically shrewd person. So what he did, first made Nitish Kumar to jump the ship. Nitish Kumar and RJD could have teamed up together, it could have been a very formidable alliance in Bihar. He first stopped that. Second, bringing back Rashtriya Lokdal in UP was a good thing, because for BJP, it needed the much needed Jat support. And from the farmers' agitation, it was the Jat support was seen eroding from them. And he compensated that using Jayant Chaudhary's RLD. Now come to JDS. In Karnataka, JDS having widespread support across Karnataka. It has around 10,000 odd support per assembly segment and nearly 1 lakh support, 1 lakh support per parliamentary segment. It is very crucial for such a, Karnataka, BJP. So it really helped them. I should say I can make it out during phase two election is concerned. And he also weakened the other third front leaders, including Aam Aadmi Party, including Sharad Pawar, including Mamata Banerjee. So on one hand, he strengthened the BJP, but by strengthening its base in roots in places like Kerala, Tamil Nadu, Telangana, Odisha, and Bengal. On the other hand, he derailed the prospects of a third front, including the third front leaders. On the other hand, he is taking the bull's horn of the Congress. So if we can make the both the things, we can know how Modi has taken the election seriously. And to avoid the anti-incumbency of the local leaders, he has changed almost the majority of the non-performing MPs. And he has given chances to fresh and new faces. So being a political animal, I should say, Prime Minister Modi and also his, Man's Friday, Mr. Amit Shah, they have redrafted the party's prospects for 2024.
Let's say 2 years, 2019, they were back by 1st June. And by December, 5-6 months, 370 was gone, CAA was passed, and a whole bunch of other things also happened, one after the other. And Amit Shah was poised to introduce NRC bill for the entire country. And then the riot started and so on and so forth. Now, this time, I'm sure they have learned from that. So there's going to be some course correction. One of the things about this too, the Mr. Modi and his Man Friday, is that the most important thing usually is not put in the front. It comes when you least expect it. What do you think that's going to be in this case?
You mean to say the new agenda? What could be the next one?
Yes,
possible?
Yes, yes, yes.
So there are multiple issues, but what I can sense is, Mr. Shreyagiri, is this time, they will make this agenda with more public debate. They could bring about whether it is UCC or the temple taking over the government's control, pulling it out from the government's hands. Those things, they will start the ball rolling. And by the end of the tenure, I think they can pass it. That's what I feel so. Because even in the farms last case, if they could have sent it to the select committee of the Rajya Sabha, I think the issue could have been much more smoother. But the government went ahead about it and they got it passed. So what happened was this triggered the protest, and Prime Minister Modi and his team, they were caught unaware about the seriousness of this protest. They were not prepared to face the intensity of that protest, which turned out to be in a different way. So what he did was he sensed the same protest during the farmers protest happened before the just before the election. He sensed it much before, and he neutralized it, I should say. So there are multiple agendas in hand. I feel it could be one is the UCC and another it could be the temple.
Well, that's what we think is going to happen. Thank you so much. And if you have a few questions for you, Sri Kumarji.
Yes, please.
Can we have the questions, please? Just one second. Oh, we have also got to talk about the low turnout. See, you have also been a good judge of events looking at the numbers. So this low turnout makes it a little bit more confusing in the sense that, yes, there was low turnout, but there was lower turnout in the traditional Indy constituencies or Indy-friendly constituencies. Is this true for every place that went for elections in phase one and phase two, or is it just only in pockets? How did you see that part, Sri Kumar?
No, I feel it. It was widespread, but there could be multiple reasons for that. I take a few reasons. So, for example, Assam. So, in Assam, the constituencies of Barepeta or Dhubri, they had very less voter turnout, and they are the traditional Indy Alliance voters. You know why? And also the places of, for example, in places like Khajuraho. In Madhya Pradesh, it has less than 50% of turnout, about 50 to 55% of turnout. The reason being, there is only one BJP candidate and others are all independents. There was one Samaj, it was given to Samajwadi Party, and the Samajwadi Party didn't file the nominations properly. So there are other reasons also. In Karnataka, I can see it was more or less the same of the 2019 and a bit of higher turnout in some areas, including the Hasan, Bangalore rural, like that. Maharashtra, it is more or less the same. Rajasthan, I feel that because the lower turnout, it could be both the coupled with the complacency of the ruling side, and also there could be traditional Indy Alliance voters also. It could be a mix of both. So I can feel that the lower turnout cannot be compared only in one direction. There could be multiple reasons. But there are equal number of reasons which is worrisome for Indy Alliance. For a simple reason is that one is they don't have any push for their the candidates to get elected. That type of aggression is not felt on the ground. That is point number one. And second is the Indy Alliance doesn't have the charismatic prime ministerial face. So, but in 2019, there were a strong aggressive camp. There was strong aggressive voter turnout because both the sides were equally determined, be it the Indy Alliance or be it BJP side NDA, to prove themselves. Because in Indy Alliance, if you could see, there was a very strong alliance. At the time, it was UPA. You see, it had JDS and Congress in Karnataka, TDP with Congress in Andhra Pradesh. It had NCP in Maharashtra. It had Jharkhand Mukti Morcha in Jharkhand. It had SP, BSP, Congress, RLD in UP. It had with Communist in West Bengal. And it has IAADF in Assam. So it had a multiple, and it had also the DMK alliance. So it had widespread of alliance, and it had a lesser confusion during the last time. And as a result, they had the confidence. The Congress had the confidence because they thought that after the defeat of the BJP in 2018 December elections, especially in the five state elections, Congress could perform better. So there was an aggression in their side that led to the voter turnout higher. This time they were a bit demoralized. That's what I feel so.
Now, one thing that I always wonder, that, okay, so you don't have anything positive if you are elected, but at least the India Alliance could have said that the BJP promised all these things, they did not deliver. I'll give you a simple example. Smart city projects. Smart city was supposed to be like 100 cities in India were supposed to be what is called as smart cities. Why did the India Alliance, and this thing is still open, but they need to do a lot of homework. Why have they not highlighted this and saying it is now 10 years since you've said this thing? Show us what you've done. What city has become smart? Because I don't see, except in a few, you know, bits and pieces here and there, that this is a smart city project, something that you will see. What exactly has the BJP government done as far as smart city is concerned? So the thing is, I and you shouldn't be talking about this. This should be decided. There are hundreds of people working in India Alliance. Why are they not taking substantive issues where if something comes, the people benefit, and by being a responsible opposition, they can also put pressure on the ruling government? Why do you think they are not doing this? Instead, going and doing, we'll impose inheritance tax. To me, that seems like you are not even thinking how you can get elected. So you don't have anything positive to offer, but at least tell the other guy hasn't done much except rhetoric. That part, why are they not doing it, Sri Kumar?
Because they are so obsessed with this man Modi, and they have preferred to personally attack him rather than taking up the, you know, manifesto or the, you know, Sankalpa Patra, what they used to call, and go by paragraph and highlight the failures of this government. So that is the reason the Congress is still sitting in the ivory tower. It doesn't want to corner this government based on the achievements. Because I should say, 2024, the BJP NDA government had much to boast about rather than it was in 2019.
Yes.
Because 2024, they have achieved a lot of things. And whatever they have a problem in this time, there are a couple of years went in for COVID issues. So there is a good excuse for this government also, particularly during this time. And it was not there in 2019. They could have cornered this government much better. And they failed to do so because of obvious reasons. They are obsessed with this person, Modi. And they prefer to personally attack him rather than to corner him on real issues.
Just give me one second. I'm having some difficulties hearing you. My connection is not got. But that's okay. Let's just go to questions now, if you don't mind.
Sure.
All right. First question. Now I'm okay. Vijay Kumar Srivastava wants to know, sir, do you think people are voting for Modi ji, not for local M?
It is a combination of both. That is why Mr. Modi sensed that, and he has changed a lot of MPs, local MPs. And the name of Modi gives extra votes to the party as well as for the alliance. So I would honestly confess, in so many places, people vote only for Mr. Modi, not for the local MP.
That would bring up the next question. So if once Modi fades from the scene, would the BJP also descend to the same level as the India Alliance partners?
Yes, I should say yes, because we know that when Mr. Vajpayee vacated the place, it took around a decade for Mr. Modi to step into his shoes and bring the party to victory. So similarly, when Mr. Modi retires, so for a person to stepping into his shoes and match his charisma, it may take time. But BJP being a cadre-based party, they could get some person, but we should honestly agree that Modi is a man of his, of our generation. He's such a rare person. So being a person of mass leadership, a person of, administrative acumen, and a person of charisma to gain the people's trust, it's very difficult as far as a big, democracy like our country. And winning an election for a third time, it is not a simple thing. So it needs a brainstorming among the BJP leaders how to find an able successor for Mr. Modi.
Thank you. Next question from Pavan Kishore. Namaskaram. Opposition now started a campaign that BJP will remove reservations for ST, SC, OBCs if they are voted to power, targeting BJP slogan of 400 power. Do you think this has any impact?
To some extent, I should say yes, because the 400 MPs they have brought two things: one, a misunderstanding, whisper campaigning on the ground side, and the other side, a complacency from the BJP voters. That's what we could see. But Mr. Modi turned it around at the right time. So the India Alliance thought that they could get away with it. They were caught in their own web because Mr. Modi pulled a leaf from their own book.
Next one, please. Mangad Ranga wants to know, Namaskara, there are reports of low voting, but nobody talks about giving Bangaloreans an option of a long weekend. Firms don't enforce responsibility of insisting on voting. Ringless. I don't know what ringless means.
No, actually, we should honestly see people living in Bangalore. We should ask the question with ourselves rather than putting the blame on the concerns and the firms. So as a responsible citizens, it is our duty to do so. The voting is concerned. But it is not only the problem with Bangalore, Rangaji. It's a problem with all cities, be it Delhi or, Bangalore or Chennai, or except Kolkata. It's a matter of shame for all the urban centers that turnout is very low. But that's what I meant to say, that in our last discussion also I mentioned the government schemes benefit more the urban places, but still the people coming out to vote are very less. The government schemes reaching to rural places are very less, but the people turn up in large numbers. They have faith in the system and they vote. It is for the people like us to ponder.
Thank you, sir. Next question, please. Anshuman Singh wants to know, Khajuraho, Congress gives seat to SP. Candidate filed wrong nomination because he knew he was losing, didn't want to spend, so no opposition. 2019 turnout 68, 2024 it's 55, no opposition. Is this a factor?
Yes, I mentioned it also in our discussion.
Yes, we did. Yeah, next one, please. Maithili wants to know, why does Modi government interested in throwing out Biju Janata Dal when actually Naveen Babu is supporting the center in all issues? Today I heard Modi saying that they can bring about a lot of changes.
We had myself and Mr. Shri Iyer made a separate video on Odisha. So I should say that, Naveen Patnaik approached BJP not for a mutual benefit, but to save himself. Because he is there as a chief minister from 2000, the year 2000, now around 20 years. Now he is also getting retired because of his age and other ailments. So the BJP has steadily grown in Odisha. If you see the assembly vote share, not the parliament vote share, assembly vote share, from 2009 to 2014 to 2019, it had a steady increase, sharp increase. From 2014, it had around 18%, and 2019, it had 32%. So it had almost doubled the vote share. So now the BJP on its own can get around 35% of votes, and more than 35%, I believe so, and more than about 40 assembly seats. If Naveen Patnaik and BJP allies with Naveen Patnaik, then it should have to shoulder the anti-incumbency along with Mr. Naveen Patnaik. And it will give growth for Congress. The Congress, which was not at all active until now, it will give birth to an active Congress. The same mistake what it did in Telangana. Telangana, BJP soft pedal for some time. It gave a rise to the Congress. As a result, neither BRS nor BJP, but it was a Congress which came to power. So the same mistake BJP didn't want to repeat again. Thanks to the state unit which alerted the central BJP, and it is in the right track now.
Next one, please. Balaji C wants to know, what is going to happen in Amethi and Rai Bareli? Yesterday, we did a complete 360-degree analysis with Shekhar Iyer. Balaji, do watch that video, but your answer.
No, I am also equally interested because rather than Mr. Shekhar Iyer, who could be the better person to analyze on this? So, I am also equally interested to know, but I feel there is some sense of hesitancy in the Gandhi camp to contest because the time is running out, and filing a nomination at the 11th hour may not help them. So, and BJP is equally strong in Uttar Pradesh. That could give a second thought to the Congress, I feel so. But I am also, I also feel that whatever Mr. Shekhar Iyer says, that could be the, you know, precise one, because I can give my opinion. He is a man on numbers and data.
So let me give you a little bit more perspective on this. Get back to the previous question. Thank you. Let me give you a little perspective on this. So everything hinges on what Congress feels or how they did in Wayanad, right? Now, I've been asking this of many anchors. One other input you will get tomorrow in one of the programs. But today, what I can tell you is when we did the Shekhar Show live, at that point of time, it was not clear whether they were going to announce a candidate or not. The meeting was still going on, right? Now, after that only, we came to know that no decision has been taken regarding Rai Bareilly and Amethi. Now, in your opinion, looking at the polling percentages in Wayanad, looking at Annie Raja, who's a CPIM chief's wife, so there's some, you know, affinity there, and CPM somehow wants to think that we are only now completely, you know, reduced to Kerala, because no hope of revival in West Bengal, no hope of revival in Tripura. So they are fighting for their, you know, existence now. Given that conditions, do you think that Rahul Gandhi will win Wayanad? What are your thoughts?
I feel Rahul Gandhi can scrap through in Wayanad. Scrap though through. It was yeah. Because though some people say it could be a difficult one, I feel that, you know, though the percentage of votes have come down in Wayanad especially. Across Kerala it has come down, but Wayanad it was significantly lesser. But still I feel that Rahul Gandhi can scrap through. And the big problem is there is some more suspicion for me whether last minute he can participate in Telangana, whether there is an option for it. Because I still feel a person in, there is no candidate announced in Karimnagar. I don't know the reason why. Congress has not announced a candidate in Karimnagar until now.
It could actually be a possibility. Karimnagar is dicey. Karimnagar is dicey. You know why? It is close to Nizamabad. Nizamabad is BJP. Further yes. north of Nizamabad is Adilabad. That's also BJP. Yes. So, that's not, it's a tricky situation. Peddapalli is supposed to be better, but
yes,
anyway.
In Telangana, they have announced, yeah, in Telangana, they have announced almost all candidates except Karimnagar. That gives me a suspicion.
Well, we'll see. There are more of three family members who want to contest from Lok Sabha, for Lok Sabha, three members, including Vadra also. So, which way, who goes and sits where? We'll have to wait and see. Maybe it will be Priyanka who will contest from Karimnagar. Because, see, this is a big problem for the party, the family also. If Priyanka contests the first time and if she loses, bad news. Her political, as a politician, she's done. So, we have to wait and see. That's a good question, that good observation that Karimnagar is still open. Next question, please. Thought Provocator, thank you so much. With so much obsession about caste system in the US education system, with school kids being asked their caste, Biden will conduct caste census in US. You're joking, Thought Provocator. It has been snuffed out at least for the time being in California. I have a feeling Biden is going to act against George Soros. Something is going to happen. Because if you know, this is the same, rearing snakes in your backyard, hoping that it will only attack your neighbor or bite your neighbor. This is what is happening now. Oh, they have, Venkat Ramana says that Rajeshwar Rao is a candidate for Karimnagar. That means that is also gone. Thank you so much, Venkat Ramana. Yeah, back to this question. Go ahead.
Yes, regarding the, what I personally feel is this caste system. So what you can all make it out is, we discussed it long back with Mr. Shri Iyer. The Congress has abandoned its centrist position and it has slowly taken the left position. In Indian polity, there has three stages. One is right, center and left. And the parties represented was what, BJP, Congress as well as the left parties. The Congress vacated this centrist position because of its centrist you know, positioning. Congress had a wider appeal among the electorates in throughout the nation. So now we see the irony that Congress have abandoned that position, and it has chosen to go with the left, leaving the space for the BJP, and BJP occupying the centrist right position is able to cover those places which it has never covered so far. And Congress, because of its association with the left, it's losing its space, be it caste system or be it the inheritance tax or be it the redistribution of wealth. The as mentioned by Mr. Shri here, the George Soros ideas, or be it the ideas of the Rajguru, Mr. Sam Pitroda, or be it by any other foreign country, including the China's influence. But these wrong moves has taken the Congress from the position where it was established by stalwarts, including P.V. Narasimha Rao, Manmohan Singh, even Rajiv Gandhi. So to this mess, and a person whose mind is programmed with the left ideas, I am talking about Mr. Rahul Gandhi, taking into a person like Mr. Kanhaiya Kumar into the party and giving him ticket and going with the Aam Aadmi Party and also with the leftist ideas, you can imagine in what sort of mess he has got caught himself, his party, his supporters, and also his planning for the nation.
Very true. Let's go to the next question, please. Venkateswaran wants to know, Sri and Vijayji, I don't know, I think if he means Sri Kumar, do you think PM could have avoided direct mention of Muslim and could said differently?
Oh, but I should say he could have done that, but without mentioning any specifically one, he cannot make the electorates to understand the things. That could have made him to mention that. That's what I feel so. Because he thought whether to open the Congress, expose them in public, it needs a certain open remarks. So that made him to open these sort of remarks, I believe so.
Thank you, sir. Next question from Balaji. He says, there is a huge positive sentiment in Punjab from Sikhs coming towards Modi ji. What is your prediction? Out of total 13 MP seats, how many will BJP win? They are in alliance with Akali Dal, aren't they?
No. Oh. They are not in alliance with Akali Dal. Sikhs were traditionally, they were with the BJP, Shiromani Akali Dal BJP alliance. They were not averse to the BJP. Because be it the Operation Blue Star, be it aftermath, the Sikh riots and the action by the government sorry, sponsored or should say I should say that be it the Congress sponsored and the government chose not to act on those people at that time. So if we see that Sikhs were not averse to BJP, if not they are not vocal supporters of BJP, they are not averse to BJP. But we should honestly say that Modi made constant efforts to win their confidence, starting from having giving more importance to his cabinet having Sikh ministers and bringing them the CAA and bringing the Guru Granth Sahib from Afghanistan and inviting the Sikh gurus to his place, to his house, and requesting them to seeking their support against the radical elements in the community. So he made multiple efforts from his side also, and the meltdown of Shiromani Akali Dal in Punjab that also gave a window of opportunity, because he got all the leaders of Congress from Congress to his side, like including Captain Amrinder Singh is there, including Jakar, Mr. Sunil Jakar, and others also. They were in now BJP. So honestly speaking, its traditional seats were Amritsar, Hoshiarpur, and Gurdaspur. So these three places are there. Apart from that, Bittu is made a candidate in Ludhiana, I feel. So 4 to 5 seats they can eye for. Beyond that, in 13 seats, there are difficult seats also. But we can think that about 4 to 5 seats BJP can aim for, and it can get 2 to 3 seats.
Next one. Thank you for the last one. Thank you. Krishnaveni wants to know, what are the chances of Priyanka and Rahul winning the seat in Amethi and Rai Bareli?
Amethi, I
not think respectively. The other way, I think Priyanka will be in Rai Bareli. Go ahead.
Amethi, I doubt, because it has a strong candidate of Smriti Irani there, and you know, I feel that she can win it hands down this time. Rai Bareli, yes, there is a chance for Priyanka, because she has already visited the seats so many times along with her mother. So this time the electorate may feel that she can contest and she can win also, but I feel there are some second thoughts in Congress that they may not contest this time. That they are keeping it warm until now, but something may stop them to contest. Mr. Rahul may stop himself to contest along with Abhayanad alone. He may not venture into Amethi, and Priyanka may also opt out. That's what I feel so.
Interesting combinations there. You know, there's another outside chance that Rahul could decide to contest from Rai Bareli. Nothing stopping him from doing that also. So yes, that is also a possibility. Interesting. Pramod Vithalrao wants to know, how many seats do you give for BJP in second phase till now? I think 88 seats it went to election, right? 88.
Yeah, but it is better than 2019, I believe so, because it has given a couple of seats to JDS this time in Karnataka. So I have not made any seat-wise analysis so far. But a couple of seats could be a loss in Karnataka, and it could be compensated with a gain in Kerala. So I feel it could be more or less the same, but it could be having a slight benefit could be there, because Bengal it is the same. UP it got some more seats, because last time it lost because of alliance with the SP and BSP. So it is, after the second phase, it could match this old numbers what it had earlier in second phase of last time.
Saurabh Maurya wants to know, sir, is Purvanchal mein bekar logon ko ticket deke do teen tick fasad di hai, like Jaunpur, Ghoshi? Your thoughts?
I think Ghoshi they have given to Rajbar, I believe, Rajbar party, not to itself. Jaunpur, I am not aware of the candidate, but Ghoshi, I believe they have given it to, not to itself, but its alliance partner, Rajbar.
We'll wait and see how this plays out. Lots of interesting stuff still coming out. Clearly, there was a doubt whether BJP will even get 272 after the first phase, thinking that low turnout means rejection of BJP. I think that ship has been turned around. That's how it looks like. Again, till June 4th, nobody can say nothing. I'm curious about what the government is doing as far as Tamil Nadu elections are concerned. Its own state president has alleged that 1 lakh voters were turned away. These were all taken out. So that to me is a serious problem. Why the election commission is not opening its mouth is again a mystery to me. Sreekumar, what do you think is happening in the election commission?
I still feel, sir, because 1 lakh people, getting out of the electoral list is something about the election commission should ponder. But it also equally talks about the booth management, because in January they could have brought out the mother's list of voters, and it has got signed by all the booth committee agents, and they failed to detect that at that time that doesn't go well with the system, I should say. because Election Commission is culpable. But you know, without checking and you know, at the raising it at the 11th hour, it is not also equally wise on the part of the party BJP.
It is also a reflection that inside Tamil Nadu BJP unit, many people don't really want Annamalai to succeed. I have to tell the truth the way I see it. See, these are all things where you become a better leader, and if he still comes and wins, then the other side, which is, you know, rooting for him to fail, I think they'll get wiped out. Annamalai will have to display some killer instinct here to just say, you are useless. And that needs to happen. Everywhere it happens, right? So, thank you so much, Srikumar. I think this was a discussion that went far beyond just elections, but into the future of India. I'm hoping that our viewers will agree with me and send in by way of comments what you thought of this episode. Srikumar will be joining us again on Wednesday in Hindi. Srikumar, thank you so much. Namaskar.
Namaskar. Jai Hind. We'll be right back.